Hi, it's great to have your company. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. My name's Simon Smart.
And I'm Justine Toe.
The film Only God Forgives and the documentary The Act of Killing both screened at Sydney Film Festival this year, with Only God Forgives taking out the top honours, winning the official competition of the festival. Justine, you went along to both and found in both films quite a lot to talk about. In their own way, they were talking about matters of faith and justice. Let's start with Only God Forgives. Here's an extract from the trailer.
I know it's hard for you, emotionally.
Your brother was murdered.
When?
Yesterday.
Did you get the guy that did it?
It's a little more complicated than that, Mother.
Meaning what exactly?
You can't go around killing cops anymore.
If the tables were turned, your brother would have found you a killer, brought me his head on a platter.
So, Justine, what's this film about? It sounds pretty dark to me.
It is actually. So, Ryan Gosling plays Julian, and he's this drug smuggler who operates this Thai boxing club, and his brother Billy gets killed, and then because of that, their mother, Kristen Scott Thomas, arrives, and she basically demands that Julian avenge his brother's death. And this brings Julian into a confrontation with a local cop called Chang. This guy's kind of interesting. He tends to act outside the law, you might put it that way, and basically carry out the justice that he sees fit, depending on the crime.
Well, this film won the official competition, Sydney Film Festival, but it's divided the critics. Some people seem to hate this, others not so much. What did you think? Was it good?
Yeah, it's an interesting film. It got booed at Cannes, which might make you like it even more.
It's not a promising start.
No, it's true. I would say that the film overall has too much style over substance. I think it looks fantastic, but I can understand why people think it doesn't work. I have to admit, I read a bit about why the director made it before I saw the film, and so I watched that in mind with that in mind. And he said that he wanted to make a film about a man who wants to fight God. So it does make me think that in some way it's a really interesting idea, but like he's built this film around this idea. And if he's only ever interested in that idea, like the rest of the film can suffer. Obviously not the look of it, but when it comes to character development and all that stuff, it doesn't really make a lot of sense in some ways. But I do think it's an interesting thing to ask.
Yeah, the title with like this, Only God Forgives, and what you've said about the director wanting to make a film about a desire to fight God. I guess that means we are at some level dealing with spiritual questions.
Well, yeah, well, here's what the director said. He said that when he was making this film, he was going through this pretty rough time. He and his wife had a difficult second pregnancy. So he was dealing with, I think, the question of suffering, and it made him want to fight God, even if he wasn't really sure why he wanted to do that. So, yeah, he wants to punch out God in relation to the kind of difficulty that goes on in his life. And so, I mean, obviously Julian has a different motivation for wanting to punch out God. But what I think happens in the film is quite interesting, because Julian ends up facing off against Chang, the cop, and the cop just wipes the floor with him. He just knocks him out completely. So, you know, God is this all-powerful figure, but he's not exactly nice.
So Chang in this instance takes on the kind of character of God.
Yes, sorry, I should clarify that. Yeah, so he tends, especially in the way that he conducts these nighttime trials, he carries out the sentence immediately. He's got that sort of godlike presence and capacity to deliver justice. But the scene where Chang and Julian are facing off, actually, it's really funny watching it. I was going, this reminds me of another story of another man's encounter with God, and I think of the story in the Old Testament where Jacob is just a guy and he's wrestling with someone who turns out to be God. But that story paints quite a different portrait of God than we get in the movie Only God Forgives.
So we hear how the cop comes out in this story. How does it resonate with the story of Jacob, and how's it different?
Well, when Julian fights Chang, it's over super quick, right? Whereas in Jacob's case, the fight goes on all night, and it only ends when the stranger, like the God figure, actually touches Jacob on the leg and it puts his leg out so he can't fight anymore. And this, I guess, suggests that the stranger could have just knocked, you know, Jacob out completely right at the start, but he was actually withholding the full extent of his might so he could actually grapple with Jacob. So, you know, just even from that comparison, we're talking about a God who gets down on people's level, you know, who's merciful in that sense. And this is quite unlike that the character of the cop who, you know, he may be interested in justice, but he doesn't demonstrate a lot of mercy. So I think it's really ironic that the film is called Only God Forgives, because the God that you see in here is as far from a forgiving God as you can get. And it's one that completely is out of step with the biblical picture of God.
Want to fight?
Okay, so let's turn to, that was interesting, let's turn to the other film, The Act of Killing. There's lots of grim stories you seem to be attracted to, Justine, but what's important and interesting about this one?
Yeah, well, this is fascinating. It's a documentary. This guy, Joshua Oppenheimer, was setting out to make a film about the survivors of these anti-communist purges in Indonesia in the 1960s. So all these enemies of the state, you know, so-called, who were communists, were targeted and killed by a whole bunch of people. Some 1 million people died. And so Joshua Oppenheimer, the filmmaker, tried to interview these survivors, but he found that they wouldn't talk to him because the killers were out in the open, you know, living these ordinary lives, and their deeds were proclaimed and announced and known, and no one did anything about it. So they were living with impunity. And these killers were really happy to talk to Joshua about what they'd done, which is surprising enough. But beyond that, they were even happy to film reenactments of the kinds of murders that they carried out, as though they were starring in this Hollywood-style film. So the film is this very weird but fascinating and really gripping blend of documentary and fiction.
Baffling to think of people who would boast about killing others.
It is, you know, and I remember at the screening, because Joshua Oppenheimer was at the festival, he said that it's as though the Nazis have won, basically, and years later they've been interviewed, so they tend to view their deeds as completely justified. You know, as one of the killers says, his name is Artie, he says that it was war and, you know, morality is relative. This is a direct quote from him. So his attitude is, why feel bad about what happened? He only did what he had to do. But there is this other guy as well. His name is Anwar Kongo. He's another one of the killers. And while he tends to tell some pretty horrific stories about his past, you can see that he's also struggling with, you know, the past as well. He's actually burdened by it. And strangely enough, it's in watching one of those reenactments that he's in that makes him force and confront as well the gravity of what he's done. And it's really powerful and affecting.
Yeah, so you got one guy suggesting morality is completely relative, and the other killer suggesting that it isn't, that it was wrong to kill people. Is that where he comes down?
Yeah, absolutely. He recognised it in a really powerful way, and of course it's not this abstract, you know, oh, what I did was wrong. It's a real confrontation with his actions. In the reenactment that I just referred to, Anwar is playing a victim, right? And he actually undergoes a fake version of the kind of murder technique that he used on other people, and it just breaks him. You know, even though it's a totally constructed, artificial scene, he just can't do it. And later, when he watches it back, he says, did the people I tortured feel what I do here? He's asking the director. And Oppenheimer, who's off screen, just says, you know, he doesn't really hold back at all. He just says, actually, your victims felt far worse because you could stop this and they couldn't. They knew they were being killed. So, like, imagine someone said that to you. I mean, this guy, Anwar, he's like, have I sinned? I did this to so many people. It's like an incredible moment.
Does he use that word? Does he say sinned?
He does. Yeah. I mean, it's surprising. It's so grating on the modern ear, but yeah, he does use that word. Oppenheimer doesn't really go into that kind of word so much. The most that he asks of Anwar is, you know, does he believe in karma? So that's the most that he suggests in that direction. But, you know, I wonder whether talking about sin in these contexts is, in some senses at least, you know, more fitting than the terms that we would otherwise use. Terms like war crimes, right? I mean, these aren't neutral terms themselves, but they tend to scrub God, right? Or they tend to remove God from the picture. So something like sin, you can't get away from a divine context. War crimes, you know, you can. So, as I said, Ardy, one of the killers, who says that morality is relative, he also says that war crimes are defined by the winners as well. So I guess his point, you know, is that as we've left behind the idea of God and the idea of a transcendent, you know, reality and also a sense of ultimate justice, the idea that, you know, God is the impartial judge who's going to determine right from wrong and punish people if they've done the wrong thing, you know, we're just simply left with this idea that justice is something that only we talk about as humans. And let's be honest, you know, all of us aren't just all the time. Sometimes we can be incredibly unjust and oppress people. So it's a very insufficient approach to only talk about justice in these terms, in ways that remove God from the equation.
It seems as though this flexible notion of justice, where it becomes whatever you want it to mean, also means that anyone who's suffered will never actually get their day in court. They won't get justice. All the justice that they could hope for is only ever partial at best.
I think that this is what you're left with, you know, and because even though Ardy is kind of a reprehensible creature in this film, he's kind of right when he says that war crimes are determined by the winners, you know, unless, of course, there is a God who can determine and deliver true justice. And what I think is really fascinating as well is that in that conversation that Ardy has with Oppenheimer, Ardy brings up the Cain and Abel story. He says that, you know, Cain killed Abel, Americans killed Native Americans, morality is relative, you know, who can really stand beyond that and say that they are the right, they are in the right. But it strikes me, I mean, given that he's brought up the Cain and Abel story, it strikes me that in that Bible story, after Cain kills Abel, God actually confronts Cain with what he's done. And he actually says to Cain, "Your brother's blood cries out from the ground." And I just think that the film leaves us with this idea that, you know, if there is no God, if there is no ultimate justice beyond whatever we can achieve, and our attempts are pretty poor sometimes, then it's not just Abel's blood that cries out from the ground, but think of any sort of victim from history, countless, countless people who've died as a result of injustice. They won't get justice if there is no God.
Well, that's the hard thing to face, the impossibility of justice if there is no God. Justine, I remember a little while ago on this program, we talked about the film True Grit, where a 14-year-old girl gets the help of a bounty hunter to bring to justice the man who killed her father. In that film, you get this sense that justice is done, but it's a costly justice, and it's one that's only partial at best. She doesn't get her dad back, for instance. Now, this kind of justice doesn't really achieve full restoration, does it?
No, it doesn't. I think the same problem haunts the act of killing, because even if you were to bring those killers to justice, it doesn't fix everything that had gone wrong with the victims. So any justice that we talk about in relation to the act of killing, the film, will only ever be incomplete and, of course, compromised by the fact that we're humans and not all of us are just, even at the best of times. So full justice, it seems, is not real.
Yeah, well, films like these, The Act of Killing, True Grit, they form a real contrast to the Christian story where God takes on injustice of the world and deals with the cause of it. It's that kind of sweeping justice that can put all things to right in the fullest sense of that. The things that are outside of our reach but not impossible to God. That's the promise and the hope of the Christian story. I hope you'll join me next time on Life and Faith. We're going to be talking sport. We're in the middle of the winter season. Our most violent sports are halfway through and we're all enjoying those, or many of us are. But we thought it'd be a good opportunity to consider the violent nature of some competitive sport and also our obsession with it. Are we over the top in our love of sport in this country? I'll be joined by Richard Schumach, who's done a lot of thinking and writing on this subject. I hope you'll join me next time on Life and Faith.